Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to the channel. Well, the news came today that the well-known British writer Neil McCafferty has died at the age of 80. So unlike me, she was lucky enough to be born in the United Kingdom, entitled to British citizenship, but she never claimed it. Nevertheless, she was British. She claimed Irish citizenship, travelled on an Irish passport, so obviously no contradiction there. So she came from Derry. Known to some as Londonderry in Northern Ireland, brought up in a fervently Catholic family. Derry had a Catholic majority even then. There's now a very high Catholic majority. And obviously most Catholics in Ireland are nationalists. So she grew up in the Bogside, which was the overwhelmingly Catholic working class area west of the River Foyle. So there were several children in her family, and there had been tragedy. Her mother had a child who died in her womb and so on. It was a subject of a spirited debate in her family that Neil McCafferty later wrote about. Neil McCafferty, she's very well known as a journalist, as a campaigner against human rights, as a campaigner for oppression, as a campaigner for terrorism and so on. So in that sense, she shall not be missed. But she wasn't wrong on everything. I mean, I know she was a Republican, a socialist, a feminazi and so on, sort of polar opposite of me in almost everything. But I don't doubt her sincerity and her commitment to her cause. And yes, she there are a lot of sickos on her side. There's no question about that. So she was cheered to the echo on many occasions, and she will be bitterly mourned by people of that mindset. So she went to the Queen's University of Belfast. So she took an arts degree there. It's the only university in Northern Ireland at the time. But remember, university attendance in the 60s was very low. From a working class family, it was very, very well, though. Very, very low. So she did a bit of supply teaching in Northern Ireland. English was her main subject. Then she moved to Eretz Israel, worked on a kibbutz, a sort of commune farm, a very trendy thing for young lefties to do in the 60s, when Israel was still perceived as the good guy amongst Western liberals and leftists. Why? I suppose it was about the only democracy in the Middle East, apart from Lebanon, surrounded by theocracies, by military dictatorships, by absolute monarchies and so on. It was so soon after the Holocaust. Israel was also a winner, the only one where women had any semblance of equality, where people could practice religions other than Islam openly, things like that, where alcohol was allowed, pork was allowed. Of course, it's not kosher. Most Jews won't touch it, but if you want to eat pork, you can go knock yourself out, stuff like that. Or women could wear what they want, and there was women's sports, and there was a free media, free and fair elections. Now, obviously, some countries have caught up in the Middle East since, you know, even at least a semblance of that in Turkey or Tunisia and various other places. She didn't spend terribly long in Israel, but she's part of the so-called Women's Lib movement in Ireland. And although it was an international movement, she was really focused on Ireland, didn't reach out to the rest of the UK. And I know the Republic of Ireland's not part of the UK, but she didn't reach out to Great Britain that much, talked about women's issues. So fair enough. I mean, I do concur with them in some things. You know, until the 1970s, it was lawful to pay a woman less than a man for the very same work. I don't know what they say, because, well, women are smaller, so they eat less or something like that, or they drink less. She's going to find a man who's going to provide for her. Well, not necessarily. Maybe she doesn't want to. Why should a man provide for a woman in his life, or vice versa? So virtually all the politicians and judges and so forth were women. So men had the lion's share of the power. And she said, oh, this is deeply wrong. And so even when the law changed, because of the European Economic Community, that's what it was then called, which we, the Republic of Ireland, joined on New Year's Day 1973, United Kingdom joined the self same day, and that changed. And the advert to be the person in first enforcing this law, they advertised for someone to enforce the Sex Equality Salaries Act or whatever in the Irish Republic. And the advert said, and by if you're a man, it's this salary, if you're a woman, it's that salary. Uh-oh. Accidentally, the government, so used to advertising lower salaries for females, did it again in the very advert for the job for the person to enforce the law. She was all about the status of women. Until this time, often women couldn't get bank accounts. Without approval of their husband on mortgages and stuff like that. And it was assumed that a woman, as soon as she got married, would give up her job and have children, like several children. So it's difficult for people, say, in their 20s or teens to realize the centrality of Catholicism to many people's identity in Ireland at the time. I mean, I remember it in my childhood, and obviously it's on the wane by the time I was around. But when she was a toddler in the 1940s, attendance at mass was very, very high. And for some people, that was essential to Irishness. Protestants weren't really Irish or whatever. That was a foreign thing. And we were massively overshadowed by this island to our east, which was double our size and about 20 times our population and richer. And the only thing that we could win on was being the most zealous Catholics in the world. We're the best, the Marian year. So our devotion to the Blessed Virgin and to, all the saints was second to none. That was the idea. The Pope was a quasi-monarch. If he didn't want to be a unionist, he didn't want to look at Elizabeth II and George VI before her. She wrote for all sorts of publications, principally the Irish Times, the Irish Press being a name of a newspaper in Northern Ireland, very much a nationalist stance, the Village Voice, the Hot Press, the Sunday Tribune, and various publications abroad. Although she's Irish, and so far as I know, Hot Village Voice obviously is a New York publication. So far as I know, I mean, she couldn't speak Irish, so she wrote exclusively in the English language. In those days, contraception was it was illegal in the Republic of Ireland, not in the United Kingdom. And so she said, well, women have got to be able to choose to have children or not. The spacing their children, blah, blah, blah. And so having half a dozen children was like the norm in Ireland in the 60s, well, certainly in the Republic. And then, well, Protestants using whatever sort of contraception they've got abroad. But the Catholic Church said, nah, you mustn't frustrate God's will. You must accept as a gift from God as many children as the Almighty deems fit to send you. Now, this is coming out of the days, of course, when people had a dozen children, only half of them made it. But by the mid-20th century, healthcare was so good that almost every child made it. Most people were still leaving school at 16. University was still very much a minority thing. And often women who qualified as doctors or whatever gave up in their late 20s because they got married. And some women were choosing not to give up or to take maternity leave for a year and to go back into it. And people didn't seem to consider having children a choice. If you got married, of course you're going to have children. But it's beginning to see, no, you can't. Remember the contraceptive pill came out in the United States in the 1960s. And she said these things ought to be allowed. People shouldn't be criminalized for doing these things, which are harming nobody else. And obviously, 1971, the Constitution was amended in the Republic to delete the bit about the special position of the Catholic Church. But nevertheless, I was astonished to see in Norris versus Ireland, the Irish Supreme Court citing theologians of the Dark Ages. There's some sort of legal authority. So 1971, she and members of the so-called Irish Women's Liberation Movement went from Dublin to Belfast. They purchased contraceptive items and brought them back into the Republic, the so-called contraceptive train, and asked by a contraceptive by a customs officer, "Do you have any contraceptives, officer, on you?" Yes, she said. "Well, where are they in my body?" These are things like Dutch caps or whatever, and he it was flummoxed, didn't know what to do. So she was involved in nationalism and indeed republicanism in Northern Ireland. She was there on the 30th of January 1972 when the parachute regiment killed 14 people. So she said that she lent her support to the Irish Republican Army. Methinks she was an armchair supporter. And when terrorists were detained at Armagh Prison, she said that she would strive to ensure they had better living conditions because feminists should not disregard the plight of other feminists. Obviously, these criminals had brought it upon themselves. Now, I don't think that was a big thing in her life. She didn't maintain that for long, her pro-terrorist stance. But there should be forgiveness. That was a very long time ago. And yes, the loyalist terrorists carried out some beastly attacks as well. They're absolutely foul. Two wrongs don't make a right. Moreover, the Crown Forces, some of them committed crimes too, as well. So she wants Northern Ireland to leave the United Kingdom to achieve fusion of the Republic. Fine. But there should be no unlawful violence in furtherance of that objective. So she wrote, she contributed to Sisterhood is Global about the international women's movement. She said, coping with the womb and the border. So she wrote a lot. And of novels and so on. She was in the Pat Kenny show when Pat Kenny was a radio host in 1990. So she lived in Dublin most of the time, publishing a biography, Nell, in 2004. And she began to think she was a lesbian in her late teens, and lesbianism was scarcely invented in Ireland, let alone Great Britain. Then she really loved Nuala O'Fallon, who was another Irish journalist and writer, and so on. It was really out there to be a lesbian. So it was only 1980 when she began a relationship with this other woman, and they lived together since 1991. She did some controversial things. She was also a radio host, and she interviewed the then Minister of Health, Mary Harney. Mary Harney was also Taoiseach as a deputy Prime Minister. If you're not Irish, you don't realize Taoiseach is literally successor in Irish. And which she suggested that the Taoiseach was an alcoholic. And so Miss Harney took out a libel action and was awarded 450,000 euros in damages, which was like a staggering sum, especially for quite a few years ago, and so on. So she's on television almost all the time. She was very well known throughout Ireland, and got an honorary PhD from University College Cork. But the really objectionable thing about her is her advocacy for the mass murder of children, an otherwise compassionate person. And then she even acknowledged that a fetus, an embryo, is a human being. This is killing a human being. And she even said these pro-lifers have a point. So that actually makes it worse. But even she knew we're talking about human beings here, saying, well, it's a necessity. It's not a necessity. The right to life is a necessity. Well, because we didn't have this perfect stuff, should she have been killed because of that? Wait a second. I mean, abortion was illegal, even when the situation was much worse, when there were no benefits, when there was much more poverty and women had far more children. So there's even less reason for it now than there ever was. Poverty, it does not negate a child's right to life. So that is why she was a truly evil person, and I will not miss her one whit, even though she wasn't wrong on absolutely everything. Okay, thank you for watching my channel, and make sure you do all you can to save children.